I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Our Shelves, a podcast where writers from the legendary feminist publishing house Virago talk about their cultural worlds. We'll be diving into these writers' bookshelves, record collections, and recollections to discover what inspires them. I'm Lucy Scholes, and my guest today is Mulatu Uche-Okori. Mulatu was born in Nigeria and moved to Ireland in 2006, where she spent the first 8.5 years living in the direct provision system. It was during this time that she began to write. Since then, her work has been published in several anthologies, and her first collection of stories, This Hostile Life, was published by Virago in 2019. She's currently working on a PhD at Trinity College Dublin, focused on creative writing centres as nurturing grounds for creativity. Welcome to Our Shelves, Mulatu. It's really wonderful to have you here today.
Thanks, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
So I want to talk a little bit about This Hostile Life, just to begin with. And the first two stories in that collection show us a slice of Irish life that's not often written about, that of those people who are living in the direct provision system like you were. And I found a wonderful video where Sebastian Barry called you the laureate of the direct provision system, which
oh,
is
dear Lord Jesus.
Which is a wonderful way of putting it, I think. But I think just in case any of our listeners aren't familiar with what this is, could you briefly explain it? And then could you tell me a little bit about what it was about your own experience of the system that made you want to write about it? I'm wondering if it was a case of just the sort of timing being right and the stars aligning, or was there something very particular about your experiences and the experience of the other people that you encountered that made you want to kind of bring these stories to a wider audience?
Well, I think for This Hostile Life, yes, you're right. It was written when I was in direct provision. Some of the stories, these stories and some other stories were written at the time when I was there. And for me to write was just, it was just something I started doing. It wasn't intention. There was no conscious thing, you know, in terms of writing. I think to answer your question, I think it was just the characters that I was coming in contact with. You know, such huge characters, and you want to somehow transport them into a book, because you can't tell them, you can't tell about them. You there's just a way that you to share stories about the people that you meet, or the events, and the sometimes it's just you know, probably part of a dialogue or a conversation that prompts me to write it down, and the way it's spoken that you want to just pin down on paper. So for writing in a direct provision, as you asked, is a place where when you come into Ireland to seek asylum, there's a place where you're kept until your the whole process or your application has been processed fully. So that's what direct provision is all about. And it was while I was there that I started writing these things. And I didn't know at first what to do with just these ideas or these stories that were running around in my head until I spoke to a friend of mine about this. And I just have these stories. She said, write it down. And I thought, geez, that should have been the most, you know, like, obvious thing to do. And then I said, writing. And then it just happened from there, really. So.
And you hadn't written anything before? Had you been writing other stories?
I did actually study English literature, but I was more of a reader than a writer. Okay. I never thought that I would become a writer. You know, it was just not something I thought of doing or becoming, you know. So this is all new to me. I've always enjoyed reading, but I've never seen myself as the other, you know, the other side of it, as in terms of writing. And so it's all something new, or something that just an accidental thing that happened.
And you say that it was the sort of the larger than life characters that you met while you were there, the people you wanted to put down snatches of conversation, or you know, the character profile of somebody. And your writing since that period of your life, is it, does it still grow out of something similar? Do you see people and you think, oh, I really want to write about that person? Or do you hear a snatch of a conversation and want to do something with it? Or how is your writing, has it changed over the last few years or not?
I don't think it has changed really, because I'm still that kind of person. I still observe, like I observe a lot. And so those are the things that, you know, feed into my writing, you know, sometimes. And I think every writer is like that in some sense. It could just be, you know, a dialogue, or you're watching people and something happens, an event, you know, and you think, and it's always the smallest thing, the tiniest thing that, you know, that interests you. And then you build all this whole world and words around it, you know. So I think it hasn't changed. And and I think probably if that changes, I think that's giving up writing, really, because writing is all out of born out of stories and things and events happening around you and conversations happening around you as well.
And do you think that the short story form, does that align itself particularly with that type of inspiration? These little bits and pieces of life that can sort of, you can build a world around them into a short story. Does it work the same way with novels, do you think? Or is there something different?
I think with a short story for me, it's more, it's almost like something I just wear easily. It's like a cloth, a comfortable, you know, outfit that you just slip into easily. And I find that it captures things. So it captures things quicker. You can just do a lot. But then I enjoy reading novels. You know, when I pick up a novel, it's almost like this. I love novels. I love reading, you know. So it's but for me as a writer, I find writing short stories, you know, an easier form. Let me put it that way. Like I can finish up something, a story, a short story in say 10 pages, and then I move on to something else. And probably that's part of my character, my personality now, and I should try writing novels and see myself, you know, grow out of it, you know. So maybe it's the patience in me that's coming out in short stories, that impatient sort of maybe personality that I have, you know, that
I like that idea, the impatience, you just want to kind of get something down and move on.
Yeah, exactly, and move on. So that probably is just, you know, what comes out in that form. Never thought of it like that, but that could be it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your reading. You said you've always been a big reader. And obviously, I think the first question I'm going to ask you is, what books are currently on your bedside table right now?
Okay. The books that are there, I'm reading three books all at once. And that's not good. So I have Why the Moon Travels, and that's by Owen Badoun. And It's a book of travelers' stories, you know, of people, you know, the culture, and told by his father, his mother, and all of that, about things that that travelers hold dear. But it's just the way he told them with such beauty and such grace, and so, you know, like there's just this love, you know, that's all, let me just use the word, that's all that is reflected in it. And it's just, it's so nicely written. Once you start reading it, it's lovely, you know, it's nice. And this I just added, I'm just into like a page, and this is, I just got this recently, just last week really, A Ghost in the Throat, and that's by Doriano Grofer. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the name right, and I'm just reading it now, and is what written, and I'm trying to get into it to understand the story in the beginning where I am. She's describing herself as a mother, and there's just these things that I can, you know, draw similarities from, you know, her descriptions of herself as a mother and her chores and life, and right. You know, having to move, she's moved, you know, it, to different places in how many space of years. And so I actually do, I can actually, you know, I sympathize, and I do understand where she's coming from in that sense. So I'm enjoying reading that. But can I just say that the reasons why I like these two books I'm reading is just that, you know, because of the pandemic, there's just this assumption that art is, you know, people, there's just, there's more art being created and all of that. But I think that, you know, when I read short stories that have been, you know, written around this pandemic and all of that, and I find, or stories that are based around, that I know have just been written, I find that sometimes it's coming from almost like a gossipy perspective. And that's just right. why I love these books. From what I get from them, I think they must have been written before, long before the pandemic, but were, you know, probably published now. So they don't yeah. have that sense of like, everyone is just trying to write something around the pandemic thing. And, you know, it's just like, this is well developed, well thought through, you know, so I'm enjoying reading them as opposed to reading something that I feel I'm getting a sense that it's rushed. And that it's yeah. just that sense of someone is looking into their neighbor's house and drawing conclusions from what the neighbor is doing, you know. So that's what I get from the pandemic readings that I've done so far. So this is, for me, this is beautiful.
Do you think also, are you enjoying reading things that have nothing to do with it because it's all just a bit in your face as well? Do you think you turn to books that take you away from the current moment?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, there's a sense, it's everywhere. And not just the sense that it's just the pandemic, it's all about how people, you know, you get a sense that everyone is talking about how somebody else is dealing with the pandemic. And I don't think that, you know, it's like, I don't really want to know about how, I can have that in a conversation, but not, you know, because what you get is that you're getting somebody's opinion about someone else. And I, you know, and there's just something in me that is not open to that, you know. I just want to read something else. Like, it's fine, everyone has to deal with things their own way. I don't need to, you know, hear one's, you know, A's opinion about how B is dealing with it, and, you know, their judgment on B and all that comes with it. So
well, there's something about sort of people jumping on the I don't want to really call it the pandemic bandwagon, but that idea that you have to automatically process what you're thinking at that moment. And sometimes it's quite good to let things sit for a while and see what comes out of it, maybe in a few years' time or in a few, you know, even in a few decades' time, what is the kind of takeaway, rather than having the pandemic novel having to be written this year. So
I completely agree with you. And that's how things have always been, you know, like it takes time, and then, you know, you hear someone's opinion. It's not just immediate as well. So,
yeah. But I mean, the second question I was going to ask you is, can you tell me about a recent article or podcast that's made you think? And I suppose on just before we get to that, they're thinking, are you tempering your amount of kind of current content? Are you being careful about not sort of reading too much news, or reading just enough, or keeping up with current podcasts and articles while also doing the things that take you away from that? Or is it a balancing act always?
At first I was reading everything, and then I realized this is a mistake, and I went off a lot of my social media, you know, I went off social media for a while, which is only Facebook. I'm not in the rest of it. And now, and then I, you know, I got into reading newspapers articles, and now I've realized this is a mistake. Now it's getting to, you know, it's almost becoming like social media as well. So I'm kind of like reducing the opinion polls and all of that. So it's constant. You're really having to look and accept yourself and check, you know, how am I being affected by all of these things I'm hearing? Because you get the sense that it's just one voice and just, you know, one narrative and everything, and it's not getting me anywhere, let me just put it like that. So it's fine to step back a little bit. So I find myself dropping, you know, I'm stepping back a little bit as time goes on, the more increases.
But so what is the recent article or podcast that has made you think?
Actually, it's one of yours.
This is not a setup, I promise.
No. It was very interesting. And that was Deborah Francis White.
Yes.
Yeah, it was brilliant right from get-go. You know, she had so many. But then I think a lot of the things that she said, or everything she said, was just, you know, spot on. And I think, but I'm just going to talk about, there was something she drew my attention to that I've always thought, but I've never heard it articulated as beautifully as she did. And that was the fact that who is telling the story? Where is the narrative coming from? And this was at the beginning of the podcast, your conversation with her. And she said, if I point at a black man and I say he stole my purse or something, everyone is going to believe me. But if he points at me and says, you know, I stole his wallet, and then the police is not going to believe me, you know. So it's all about, you know, it's about belief, you know. Who do you believe? Who comes across? It's, you know, it's just that thing in society where you're aware of as a person, or, you know, for myself as a person of color, as a migrant, as someone who has been in direct provision, you're kind of aware of all those things. But then when someone else comes from the outside and puts those things into words, and you're thinking, oh, you know, I've always thought this thing, you know, and then, oh, you mean other people are aware of these things, you know. So that was, I thought that was great. And the way she said it, because it's something you encounter, you know, or you come to, who do people believe, you know, why do they believe these things? Why do they, you know, think this way and that way? But it's just about who is making the report, whose narrative is heard. I loved that podcast. I loved listening to it. And I enjoyed all the things that she touched on, you know. And
yeah. Oh, well, I'm very glad you enjoyed it, obviously. Oh, but yeah. Particularly, but what you're saying about that issue of whose narrative is it, where is the story coming from? It also makes me think a little bit about the second story in This Hostile Life, Under the Awning, because you've got a creative writing student in that story who's being told or having to take on not only what the other students in the creative writing class are saying, but also she's shifting between perspectives, isn't she? Second person, first person. And so it all comes down to sort of authenticity and whether her story is believable, because some of the other students in the class think that it's too depressing and it's not. And but for her, it's a day-to-day reality, right?
I think that story kind of underpins that. And there's something that you touched on there that about you know, which I think Deborah mentioned in her podcast with you about, you know, when someone, a person of color, tells you about racism, you know, how does it make it? She told a story about, you know, someone talking about racism, and then the other, I think it's, she was referring to a book, you know, Why I Don't Talk to White People About Racism. Yeah. So, and she mentioned that story. And I think that's just what that story Under the Awning talks about, is about how do you depict your everyday life so that somebody else is almost like you have, you're trying to tell someone about an issue, you know, and then the other party makes you feel guilty for trying to speak about it. And that's in itself, that's another form of abuse as well, because it's not just that, you know, this is happening to me. You're making me feel terrible for even speaking about it. And she's alone in a class in that sense. Like every other person is of this, you know, are different from her in a sense, and she's trying to bring this thing out to them. Of course, it was having difficult for her to bring out the issue to you know, to play it out or speak about it in the first place. And then you're getting these reactions from the people reading it in terms of, you're too, there's no, you know, haven't anything nice happened to you, you know, couldn't you have said something nicer, you know, couldn't you have put it that way? And then you get the sense that, where do you, you know, and then you feel for the girl, because she's nodding her head to all these criticisms, and then no one is actually addressing the issue. So, except one of the classmates, and then he doesn't respond to her afterwards. So
yes,
but that's just it's a reflection of what, you know, happens in terms of discussing racism and all of that, and it gets to a point where you don't even want to have conversations around it anymore, because you know that it's just going around the circle and nothing is penetrating, you know, because every other person feels sensitive about it, and
Yes, I think it's just, I think what comes across in your story so much is that sense of, you know, she makes herself vulnerable. She puts herself out there by, you know, trying to put down in the story what her day-to-day experiences are, which are not pleasant. They are, you know, she's the subject of a lot of racism. And then all these people sort of undermine her as if her story doesn't count. And yes, it's so very similar to what Deborah was talking about, that idea that the way that one person tells something, there is a sort of automatic authenticity based on the color of their skin, and that when someone else says something, that just is absent, and you have to we need to shift the way that we're thinking about, you know, the sort of all the other things we bring to the conversation, right? Or all the other things we bring to other people's conversations.
Yeah. If I want to talk about racism now, I have to, or if a conversation about racism is going on, it's almost like it's easier for someone with a white skin color to explain it, as opposed to, because if I start talking about it, it becomes like I'm whinging, I'm complaining a lot, you know, all of these things. So it's all about who do you want to listen to? Who does it, you know, who is it that when they talk, it's better absorbed, you know? So sometimes it's not even about the conversation we're having, it's about who do you want to have those, you know, who do you want to say something, you know, who are you comfortable listening to? It's gotten to that point, you know, where, and then I think that that conversation is never had honestly, you know, there's always this, you know, what I say, honest about their thinking of their thoughts. And you know, she raised those issues in her podcast. And I think she raised it so beautifully. And so, you know, so I was quite impressed with how deeply, you know, she spoke about things. So, yeah, I enjoyed that.
Okay. Well, that's lovely to hear. And I'm glad that it resonated in that way with you as well. So brilliant. Moving on to our next question, which back sort of in the realm of entertainment, I suppose. I'm asking about films, songs, or TV series that you've loved lately. And I'm wondering a little bit if you're, how much of your sort of reading life is similar to the way that you ingest other culture? Do you look for the same sort of things in TV and film as you do in your books? Is that, whether that's entertainment or being transported to somewhere different? Or tell me a little bit about your viewing habits and then some series in particular and films.
I think now I'm falling in love with films that are in translation, that transport me to other cultures as well. Okay, let me just start with the films that has moved me recently. There's a film, Capernaum. I don't know if you've seen it. A Separation. And then Rock, which I don't know if that has been released recently. And then you get a sense that I think what I adore about, or what I adored about these films were just the thing that they just took simple storylines that probably you would not get your attention if someone, you know, puts it on paper. If there's a conversation about it going on around you, probably might not capture attention. But then the writers or the filmmakers took this kind of very simple storyline and played it out so beautifully. And then you're looking at characters that you don't, you're getting a sense, I'm not, you know, usually I'm used to siding with a character from the get-go, like, oh, there's something about the film that makes you sympathize. You already know this is a protagonist, so I'm going to sympathize with the protagonist from the beginning to the end of the film, you know, and just watch them go. But this films, in a way, make you question everything. You see the flaws in their characters and everything, and then it's just played out, and you're going with all the characters, you're going, yeah, that makes sense, this makes sense. So you're wavering all the time, and I think it challenges me as a person, you know, watching these movies, and I, at the end of them, you know, like, even if I have to, you know, they make me cry. They're just simply written, they're just beautifully crafted, you know, there's nothing heavy about them, there's nothing, you know, it's just, I probably am not, you just have to watch them to understand what I'm trying to say here. But it's just and then they're all in translation, so I'm looking at other cultures, I'm learning something from them, and then, you know, I'm moved along with them, you know, so it's been enlightening.
Is there something about it seems to me that you're saying that you like the sort of authenticity or the reality of what you're seeing on the screen, that it feels very real. It doesn't feel like a sort of Hollywood setup. It doesn't feel like something has been forced by the author. What you've got is actually a sort of slice of life in front of you.
You've just said it all. You know, it's just the realness of it. It's just the characters, the actions, the words they say, the things they do. So it's just simple, and you're following them. There's just nothing huge, nothing, you know, there's nothing being, you're not set up to feel a certain way. It's just you, and you're wavering in and out of these emotions, and, you know, so it's just, I don't know. Capernaum for me is just the best, like, it blew me away. And just to give you a separation, to give you an idea of what I mean about the plot in A Separation, it's just this couple that the woman wanted to leave Iran, and then the husband, you know, didn't want her to leave, and then it's just these things that happened in between, you know, it's Lucy, you just need to watch them to understand. And I hope you fall in love with them, with the, you know, the way I'm, you know, the way I'm going on about them. I hope you fall in love with these films the same way that I do, or that I, you know, but they're just wonderful. And I think that people should be paying more attention to films like that. And we should have more and more of them on television as opposed to, you know, the big box movies.
Yes. I'm also wondering whether, because maybe I'm reading too much into it, but from what you're saying about what you really like about them, it reminds me a little bit of what you were talking about in terms of inspiration for your own writing, the short stories, these sort of little nuggets of real life that then you sort of expand on, and you get a glimpse of a world and the sort of realities of it and everything don't know, as looking from the outside in, as someone who's read your stories, I think there's something going on there. I don't know if you've ever, have you ever made that connection yourself in terms of what you like to write about, but also what you like to maybe be entertained by?
It's possible, though. It's possible because I've noticed that, because I just like the simple things. And I think that life is full of the simple things that can just, you know, and it's usually the things that are ignored or that are not, that can make, you know, can make or break. And I think that as human beings, the decisions that we make in life are not the huge decisions or the things that change our lives forever. They don't come with big drums and, you know, all of that, you know, or else we wouldn't have done them. So, you know, so these are the things that matter. And when someone takes those little things and makes something out of them, you're blown away because it's you think, oh, this is just so like real life, you know, this is the kind of mistake or the kind of things that someone decision that someone, and I think that's what, you know, it, I think those are the things that inspire my writing. And I wish, oh, when I watch films, I wish I can write something like that.
I mean, I've heard many people say, this is not a kind of new thought, but often that it's short stories that make the best films, like rather than trying to adapt an entire novel, which can be very unwieldy and long. Sometimes you can make the most beautiful films out of, you know, short stories, those succinct nuggets of a narrative. I obviously can't think of one off the top of my head now that's worked like that, but I think there is maybe a natural affinity between the two forms as well. So
it is possible, you know, but it's interesting, you know, that thinking about things in that way, in that direction, in terms of it's just opened my eyes, and you know, and I'm glad for it, to how, you know, stories can be told with just the, you know, the barest minimum of things or plot, you know.
Yes, exactly. Well, I hope you get the chance to write some scripts yourself someday. I'll be looking forward to that. Arshel's be back in just a moment.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Our Shelves. I'm Lucy Scholes, and I'm talking to Malati Ucheokore about filmmaking and short stories and the possible connections between the two forms. Next on our list of questions, Malati, we've asked you to pick a photograph that you treasure. But I think your first response to this question was that you're not really that into photographs, are you?
Not at all.
No, this is very interesting. So could you tell me a little bit about that? Is that not that you're not very into taking them, or you don't like displaying them, or what's the story here?
I don't like taking them. I don't like displaying them. It's just not something that I've never been into. I remember as a child, like every photograph I'm into, I'm crying, you know, because it's something I just, Texas taking pictures, you know, and it hasn't changed. So I am...
So you're not on Instagram or anything like that? Where
no, not at all. I wouldn't even be able to keep up with that, you know. So I don't have the patience to scroll through. Sometimes you look through people's pictures, but it's not something I can constantly do, you know. It's just not something I do too. And I don't know if there's something there, you know, but I just don't... I'm not into taking pictures or even, you know, collecting, but I'm glad when I see pictures that, you know, old pictures, I'm glad that there's something to, you know, that reminds me of an occasion or something. So I'm always excited to, so it's important to take pictures, but for some reason it's just not something I've ever taken to myself.
Well, I always wonder slightly, because I mean I am guilty, I do use Instagram, but I was thinking the amount of times I'll photograph sort of things to put on Instagram, but then I have so few photographs around my home because I think people today take them on their phones. It's quite, you have to go through quite a rigmarole to then get them printed out and put up on a wall, which would be quite different to, you know, I don't know, a few years ago when people would always get their photos printed out, obviously. So I do think things have changed slightly, but do you have any photos on display or that are particularly poignant to you then?
if I do take pictures, I would, you know, it's always with the sense, with the intention that someday I'm just going to get them printed out. And when I have time, I get them printed. I still like that old-fashioned way of having pictures printed out. One of the pictures that I like that I got recently, and this was from my sister, was a picture of my mom. You know, this was years ago, probably in the 70s that she took them. And as I'm looking at the picture, I'm looking at it now, it's on my shelf. She was quite young then. There's no huge story around it, but it's just that kind of remembrance, how who she was at the time. She would have had like 4 kids, you know. So, and you know, I'm just looking and thinking, my God, you know, and she still looked so young. There's nothing there's no huge story around it, but it's just how, you know, I look at that picture and it takes me back to the time and to other pictures that were taken around it. I remember myself in one of them. You know, and the occasion, you know, of the picture, and that's just what's at all. And then the second picture that I would like is a picture of myself and one of my best friends in school. You know, that picture, when I treasure it, I'm going to say, because I remember we haven't seen each other. This was before mobile phones and all of that. We hadn't seen each other for a long time. And I think that when Facebook came out, it, because of her, I actually went on Facebook. Because I was trying to track her, treat her, you know. And then eventually when we got connected on Facebook and we spoke to each other, she said to me, she was so excited. She said, I joined Facebook because of you, because I wanted to find you. And I said, oh, I did the same too, because I wanted to find you, you know. So it's just that beautiful. So, you know, I have a picture, you know, somewhere, and it reminds me of us, of our friendship. And there's something beautiful about that.
That's a lovely story. We're back to the world of words with the next question I'm going to ask is, what is the book or the books? Because I think you've got more than one to tell me about that you would always recommend to friends.
Okay. I have to say that it has to be The Milkman, Anna Burns. And I think that people don't talk enough about this book. I actually think that this book should be a travel guide. If you're coming to Ireland, you should be handed this book. Yeah, that's how strongly I feel about it. You know, I don't know. Have you read it?
This is a terrible confession. I started reading it and then I had to put it down for some work thing and then I didn't pick it up again, but I know I must do because I was very much enjoying it.
It's beautifully reading. It's not just about the language or the thing, it's a topic as well. You know, it's a story about, of course, it was written in the troubled times in terms of, you know, Northern Ireland and all of that. But I think it's a story that it resonated with me because I was going through certain things that I couldn't understand, that I couldn't pinpoint and say, this is, you know, what is or what is not. And then when I read this book, it was almost like someone was opening my eyes to what was going on in terms. And this happened like years ago before I even got to Ireland, you know, but I could, you know, it resonated with me quite a lot. And it's a story about a girl that is being almost like harassed and intimidated by this man in his 40s. And then the rumors that started out of it that she was going out with a married man, you know. And I think the great thing about the book is that it's about how community deals with issues, how people speak about issues. You know, in a sense, no one actually spoke to her or asked her in the right way about what was going on. So she found herself, not only was she being intimidated by this older man, this, you know, that was probably carried a lot of weight in the community, not in the right way, but he was very intimidating and all of that. But, you know, she found that no one was supporting her. Her own families, even her mother, you know, was not questioning her in the right way. And then she found her voice going until she could not. It's almost like she was mute, like she couldn't talk about it anymore. You know, she lost weight and all of that. But, you know, it's a sense of not only is it about abuse, but it's about injustice. It's about how community deal with things. It's about being a woman. It's about just so much, so many levels to the book. It's just how communities, how they draw conclusions about things without, and no one even investigates anything. No one asks the question, you know. It's just no conclusion, you know. And yet people are building these cases against her, you know. There's just these rumors going on and on and on and on and on. And every little thing, and it's just how much the man penetrated her life. Almost like everywhere she goes, he would appear. You know, everywhere she is, she would appear. Her conversations were being recorded. You know, just that sense of intimidation was just so horrible. And yet, you know, no one talks about, no one has tried to defend her. And I was just reading this book and I'm thinking, this, you know, there's just so much going on to this, you know, in this book. And I'm just, it's just so sad that people are not discussing it the way that it should be, you know, with such in depth, just what I say. This should provide a lot of conversations, not only as women, even, you know, like as the intimidation, the, you know, the surveillance, the, you know, and all for nothing. It was just an innocent girl caught in, you know, caught in somebody else's, you know, rumors, her brother-in-law's rumors. And then it's just all escalated from there. I think it's a wonderful book. I love it. And I always recommend it. It's an amazing book. I love it. You know, it's a treasure for me.
That's such a passionate kind of response to it. I tell you what, I've heard a lot of people talking about how good this book is, but you have been the most passionate about it that I've ever heard.
It deserves more than the Booker Prize. It deserves something higher. Like she was being, I think probably because she's new in the field, because she's not a recognized writer, people were underestimating her. But I think she packed a lot of punches with this book. There's just nothing to criticize to this book. And I can bet you that if I go through every book that has won the Booker Prize, you know, oh God, this is I would still pick her as the, like,
still
she would
pick still it.
Be above every other book that has won the Booker Prize. That's how passionate I am about
it. I'm wondering how much, again, based on sort of some of the discussion we've been having, how much of your love of this book do you think was down to the power of the voice? Because it sounds like one of the things that made you love it was the way that it was the voice that sort of jumped out of the page and captured you immediately, right? And is that something you look for in books that you like to read? Are you always looking for something that grabs you like that? It has to be a voice.
I read everything. But then if it's going to be exceptional, you know, there has to be that voice that relates. You know, I have to hear, if you're telling me about a character that is a Dublin man in his 50s, you know, I have to be able to relate the two, you know, in the voice of the character. I'm not saying that you can't write it any other way, but there's just something about, you know, picturing even the voice and the, you know, mannerism and everything, just by the way the character speaks and all of that. So the voice is very important for me. And probably that's partly why I love the book, apart from the topic, that just added an extra layer to it for me as well. And I do love books. Like, every book I would recommend to someone is always about the voice and, you know, some of them are not necessarily, but I think it's important when the character rises to form in terms of, a writer or an author writes to form in terms of your characters as well. So it's just that extra care, you know, that extra icing to the cake. You know, I enjoy that. I enjoy, you know, I enjoy feeding off languages and all of that. It's almost like wearing, you know, when you're cold and you're cozied up and all, and you're reading all these words that come into you. Everybody can write beautifully, but at the same time, it's still that extra mile of going into picking up the languages as well.
Well, I think Milkman crops up again in the answer to our next question, doesn't it? You've listed it amongst your other books. I'm going to ask you about a book or books that made you think about feminism in a new way, and you also put Milkman in this category, which shows how important it's been to you, I think.
It's a beautiful book. I don't think any other person has written about the Troubles or anything the way that she has written it, and from the perspective that she has written it, and all the things that she added, all the little, she gave you an insight, you know, like into a world, you know, in such a way that I don't think any other person has, you know, so far from all I've read. So, you know, so it's beautiful. Now, sorry, you were going to ask.
No, I was going to say, and was there a bit, I mean, you talked obviously about the depiction in Milkman from the female, the young woman's point of view, the fact she's being sort of trailed by this mysterious milkman, the fact that people are sort of, you know, not her own community isn't responding to her. But is that particularly about the way that it made you think about feminism? Is it because it's such a clear-sighted portrait of what it means to be a woman in a world that is not sort of set up for you, basically?
Yeah, at least for one, it shows you what it means to be a woman in that world at that time. But at the same time, it shows you what it means to be a woman now as well, because, you know, it can happen to anybody. It could possibly be happening to a girl or a woman around you. You know, they could be experiencing that kind of harassment and sense of intimidation. And then what happens is you're watching other women around them and other people around them, rather than, you know, coming together to sort of rescue. Women always take this judgmental position in terms of, you know, she deserves it, you know, in a sense. So I think that that's, you know, one of the things that book talked about. Like, there was just not that, you know, you would get that sense of, why would an 18-year-old, but that's, you know, an 18-year-old and a 40-something-year-old man, you know, be having that. But then women don't usually think in that form or in that sense. But to answer your question about the book that has talked, that has spoken to me about feminism recently, if I leave... there's so many, I picked so many of them, and I'm just going to give you their reasons quickly. Of course,
Go for it.
The Margaret Atwood one, Alias Grace, is a book that I've always loved. You know, it's just been, I read it when I was in direct provision, and it resonated with me in that sense. You know, I just love that sense of that character of this girl that's, you know, is in this prison, how she made her life. You know, it's just, it's just a beautiful character. I want to go into it. And then Cecilia Ahern, Roar. That's another beautiful book. It's just this short stories about women that is just so funny, you know, the titles as well. And, you know, you see so many different forms of, and you know, you recognize them, you know, in just reading them, how she discussed women. And then the little fires everywhere. Because I'm a mother of a girl, like one daughter, something beautiful. Like, I read it and I cried because she kind of reminded me in a sense of myself and my daughter. So I had that sense of affliction with her. But then the book that would win the prize for me is, of course, Nuala O'Fallon's, not this one, Are You Somebody? This is, I don't know if you know of it, her memoir. You know, I don't think I've read a book or a memoir that has hit me as much as it, like her brutality, her honesty, you know, it was just so, it's just something to admire. I think that she did an amazing job. I'm talking about the vulnerability that comes from writing. And then you see someone who lays herself bare like that, who opens herself up, and you're thinking, my God, how did she do it? You know, how could she have done this? It's almost like she did an injustice to herself, because you, as a woman, you know what that could, you know, what that entails for her to have spoken so, you know, laid herself bare like that, to have put it out so, you know, openly like that. Not that she, but it's just that honesty that she used in writing. And I admired her, you know. I placed her somewhere just for that book, you know. I lifted her up. So, because it's not easy to, you know, to put yourself open, to be honest about yourself in your writings, to write about your weaknesses and your strengths and all of that, and not, you know, not trying to sugarcoat it in any way, not trying to, you know, make people, and I think that comes across in the things I like in films as well, you know, when people like that, and then you kind of, you understand, because as human beings we all have our frailties, and we have our, you know, and there's some things that I listened to a podcast where someone spoke about, you know, the about her, you know, and for me, I never met her. I've listened to her interviews, and I admire her, and I wish I'd met her in real life. You know, she's she gets my admiration. You know, so
if any of our listeners haven't read that particular book, can you tell them just briefly what it sort of covers?
Of course, it's Nuala O'Fallon, and it's Are You Somebody? And that's her. She is a memoir about herself, and she spoke about her, you know, relationships and you know, failures, and you know, her search for love, I think, is what is in the whole book for me. And I think that is something that women don't usually admit, you know, to, you know, that vulnerability and all of that, and being in the wrong relationships, and, you know, having to pick yourself up and, you know, go again and all of that. And I think for me, that's just, you know, her relationship with her family, and you know, she was just honest. I don't know her, but it's, you know, like, I wouldn't write about myself. I wouldn't have the guts to write about myself like that. You know, I wish to, but then I don't think I'll have the guts to be able to do that. And for her to be able to do that, I placed her in a place where I don't think a lot of people, probably Anna Bonds, have put Anna Bonds there. Also,
Do you read a lot of memoir? Is it a genre that you like?
She made me start reading memoirs. Actually, reading that made me like venture into other ones, but I've not read one that has gotten to me as much as, I don't read a lot of memoirs. I prefer fiction, because I think that people are not that open about themselves as they seem to think that they are, you know, but then she almost like she countered all of those, you know, she broke those arguments that I, or those things that I've always thought, you know, she blew it out of the park for me. I don't think any other person has gotten there yet. for me.
Right.
You know, so.
I'm always fascinated because I think in this question in particular, when I ask the guests who come on the podcast about whether, you know, what book has made them think about feminism in a new way, I think particularly today when we're bombarded with quite a lot of sort of nonfiction titles that are either feminist tracks or they're about, you know, feminism in a much more theoretical sense, it's been really interesting that most people, and yourself included here, often give me answers that are stories about real particular, like very individual particular women that have sort of opened their eyes to, not necessarily, it's not that they come out of it thinking that their feminism has changed and it's a particular type of feminism, but it's just opened up their eyes to sort of the different lives that women lead, obviously. And I don't know, that's opened my eyes anyway, because I think I was expecting more more theoretical books to be mentioned. And actually, no, it's people's real lives that people are interested in.
You have to, I don't know if it's about, of course, you know, because it's the word feminism, I'm going to, you know, kind of like, I don't know if I when I read it, I thought, oh, you know, this is but then, you know, if we look at the description of feminism, it fits into that, you know, that
right.
The sense of empowerment as well, and being comfortable with who she is and not caring, you know, to and I just, you just have to admire it in someone and just say this is great, probably because they're doing things that you probably do not, or maybe you're doing it but in a different form, but you know that your friend think, I probably might not be able to do this, so you know, in that sense you have to give it to, you know, the person in terms of a book, you see.
Yeah. Okay. And the last question I have for you today is, could you tell me about a woman or women, if you want to choose more than one, that you admire?
I think for that, I chose, I gave you three, but then yes. I narrowed it down to one. I think I'll start with Rosa Parks now, because I was just thinking after, I struggled with this particular question, because I thought, who do I put there, you know? And then I finally settled on Rosa Parks, because I thought about her. Hey, this is a woman that did something extraordinary back in the day, you know, and what made me actually decide on her is just that sometimes the world recognizes what are they, Malcolm X's and the, you know, what's his other name now? You know, as long as it's a man in a long coat and making pictures, you know, the world seems to go with that. But then what people don't understand is what it took for that woman to stand her place, you know, to stand her ground that day, you know, and say, I'm not going to get up and I'm not going to get off, you know. And I can bet you that so many people from within her own community that said, who does she think she is? She knows that this is the law. It's good that she was beaten up, you know, for not standing up for the, you know, the other person and the boss. I don't want to put anything to it, you know. But then that, it brings me into the whole question of Black Lives Matter that we, you know, that we have going on today. And one of the things that I've realized is that sometimes, you know, we go into these things about, I've been thinking about this a lot lately anyway. It's not just something that I came into, you know, and I just started talking about today or whatever. Is that as an African, we tend to say Black Lives Matter and all of that. And I hear so many people saying that as, you know, Black people. And then I ask them, but when you bring it home to them, you know, they realize that Black lives, because I find odd about it, because a Black life cannot matter to, you can't say Black life should matter to somebody else when it does not matter to you. And I've realized that a lot of Africans, the Black lives does not even matter to them. They don't even treat the Black person like, you know, the
way, wow,
you know, they deserve to be treated. And then I see, because for that woman to have been beaten, I've thought about so many things of regarding that scenario, you know, for her to have been beaten up in a bus, so a community made it okay for that to happen. I know that they were going to segregation and, you know, like the oppression and all of that, but you know, there's something, you know, so so telling about that. There's just something about a woman standing up and being beaten up in a bus just because she refused to stand up for somebody else. And I think that for us as a community, that for these things, if we're marching for things, if we're marching for recognition, if we're marching, the only reason why these things has not changed is just because we as a community, as Black people, as Africans, as whatever, we've not recognized our value to one another. There seems to be this tendency for us to admire. She's not spoken about as much as other people, as much as the Martin Luther King or Malcolm X. She's not giving that those kind of recognition. And the only reason she's not giving that those recognitions is because she's a woman, you know.
Yes.
And and she's not giving those recognitions. And just because the other people, they're probably they hold more influence within the society, you know, they're calling these big large protests and, you know, this is that, and making speeches and all of that. But then, you know, it's one of those things, and you find schools are named after them, halls are named after them, but no one is speaking about this woman that, you know, stood up. And there's no other way you can challenge, you know, no one understands what it means to challenge bullies or to challenge people intimidating you on a constant basis. And I've been a woman, you know, as well. So it just added so many layers to it for me. And in terms of the fact that if she's not spoken about that much, if she's not lifted up that highly, that means her community did not even recognize what she did at that point. Because for me, she should be lifted up every other person. She should be spoken about more than any other person. So there's something about people not recognizing, or within her community, or within the people of the time, what she did by standing up in the bus. It's spoken about now, but I don't think it's given as much. She's not giving as much, respect as they give the others that, you know, led the fights in terms of, or led the movement in terms of equality and all of that, and you know, dismissing racial segregation. She's just spoken about as an incident that happened, but she's not one of the leading people that, you know, helped to combat segregation. And I think that that's wrong. I think that she should be actually at the forefront of everything. You know, she got she was physically assaulted for it. You know, what could have made that? There's something about her that could have made that. That means there's something in within her that says, I deserve to be valued. And that's not, no one is about that. I deserve to be valued. For me to come out and say, okay, it's like a friend of yours. Okay, let's look at this thing now. A friend of yours comes in and says to you, I protest, and then I throw tantrums for my boyfriend or my husband to recognize me and speak to me. You would look at your friend and say, something is wrong there, isn't it? Like, you would look at the friend and say, why would you need to do that? And it's just the same thing with a movement. We're saying, I need to protest to say Black Lives Matter. But she took it a step higher than that. It wasn't just up to her about it, but it was just about to say to her to say, I deserve this. I'm not going to move. You have to respect. There's just something about her self-respect, about who she is as a person, that is not recognized. And I think that it needs to change for me.
And bringing it home to the individual and the action of the individual versus the sort of the larger, you can have a larger conversation around something, but it doesn't mean perhaps as much as individual actions, which carry so much with them. Thank you. That's fascinating. Do you want to talk about the other two?
The other two, of course, is I picked J.K. Rowling just because of the controversy going on right now. Mm-hmm. I just think the poor woman only expressed an opinion. Can we just let it slide? You know, it's just, And I like the fact that she hasn't apologized, that she hasn't backed down. You know, for that, I admire her. And that's just why she made my list. You know, it's not about that, because sometimes it's not about the topic that is being spoken about or anything like that. My opinion about it is not because she hasn't, because of the topic or whatever the topic of the conversation is, but it's just that this thing about someone not being able to, no matter how nicely, you know, you express an opinion or something, no matter how I come in, you make a comment and I come in with my own comment, you know, how that can be taken out of context and how that can proportion. It's just becoming very common now, you know, and every action is demanding a resignation of some sort, you know, and life can't continue like that. You can just see that this is self destructive. This is going to implode at some point, you know. So for me, that's just why. It's just that controversy that made me to put her in this list. It's not because of what the topic is about, but it's just about this general trend that is going on around the world. And it just needs to, I think there has to be a point where it doesn't matter what part I'm standing on. It could be me tomorrow. And people need to recognize that, you know, I could be the one saying something wrong, doing something wrong. Would I want this kind of reaction coming to me for just being a human being who makes mistakes, who, you know? So it's just one of those things that we need to kind of watch, yeah, and take note of as people, you know. We just have to be kinder to, you know, to ourselves and know that, you know, things people make, yeah. If they explain themselves and they say, oh, I'm sorry I put it like that, but then we should let it drop. It shouldn't go further than, you know, what we have. And then the last, of course, on the list in terms of people I admire would be women who have been in direct provision or who have even, you know, left their home country, you know. Because, you know, no matter how much, how we put it, the world can be harsh for women, you know. I don't want to put it in any other way, but it kind of, I'm not saying that men don't go through stuff, but there's just something about it, you know. So yeah, I admire that. And I admire women who have been there because they've gone through different, you know, things in life. And yeah, and a woman never tells all her stories, as well as men don't ever tell all their stories, but yeah, you know, we all carry our marks in our body and then we just move on with things. But
Well, that's a lovely place to stop, I think, particularly with that sort of nod to women who've been in direct provision like yourself and presumably the people you met while you were there as well. So let's bring it to a close there. Thank you so much for joining me today, Malatu. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for listening. Our Shelves is brought to you by the team at Virago Press. Special thanks to today's guests, Malatu Uche-Okorie. Tune in next time for more conversation about books, feminism, and culture.